hardball hitting with a baseball bat. Kick up your heels, kid, and leave them all flat. What does it mean to be American?
This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
Election law seems so partisan these days. The traditional view is that blue states are making it easier to vote and red states are making it harder to vote. Of course, that's not entirely true. There are blue states with voter restrictions and red states with several pro-voter policies. But shouldn't the ideal be truly bipartisan voting rules? Is there a way to come together to work on principles on which everyone can agree? And how do we ensure that election professionals are in the room to help make those decisions? Here to discuss these issues is Trey Grayson, the former Kentucky Secretary of State. Trey is currently the lobbying and public policy practice group leader at the law firm Frost Brown Todd. Trey, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
Thanks. Glad to be here with you, Josh.
So let's start with your time as the Kentucky Secretary of State. You served in this role for two terms. What did you learn about running elections during that time?
I learned a lot. The highlight, I think, or the biggest issue that we had to deal with back in the 2000s was implementing the Help America Vote Act, which was Congress's response to the 2000 presidential election and, you know, other issues with our elections. That bill was passed in 2002. I was elected in 03, took office in January of 04. So most of that time period, we were implementing the plan. It was actually developed before us. We tweaked it some. That was probably the biggest thing. And then also we started the transition to paper ballots, or as we said, returning back to paper ballots for most of Kentucky. Jefferson County was the only county using paper ballots when I took office. And at the end of my term, we were working on getting, all the large counties except for Fayette by the end of my term were using paper. And then the rest gradually started switching in the next decade. But that was the highlights in the elections world. It was a busy time, but definitely quieter and less controversial.
Yeah, maybe we sort of long for the days where the biggest issue was whether we use a machine to count or have paper ballots. In 2013, so after your time as Secretary of State, you were nominated by President Barack Obama, a Democrat, to serve on the Presidential Commission on Election Administration. You're a Republican, but this was a bipartisan commission. It was chaired by Bob Bauer, Obama's lawyer, and Ben Ginsburg, who is 2012 Republican nominee Mitt Romney's lawyer. So how did you get to be on this commission? Tell us a little bit about, we hear lots about presidential commissions on voting. Trump had one, a little bit different from the Obama commission. So tell us a little bit about this commission that you were on.
So this commission had its origins and an aside that President Obama made on election night, when he was giving his victory speech and he was thanking his supporters for working hard and knocking on doors and making phone calls. And he kind of ad-libs and says, and some of you spent hours waiting to cast your vote. And then as the aside, he said, and we're going to do something about that. So fast forward to the State of the Union address in January of 13, and he announced the formation of this commission that Bob and Ben were going to lead. There weren't any members announced at the beginning, so it was just that Bob and Ben were going to lead this commission, and they were seeking to fill it out. So I knew Ben Ginsburg from my involvement in Republican Party politics and also through the Harvard Institute of Politics. I was running the IOP, that's what we call it, then, and I reached out to Ben, and I said, hey, I'm excited that this is happening. The fact that your name is attached to it as a co-chair tells me that this is legitimately a bipartisan effort, and I'm happy to talk to my former colleagues and vouch for you as part of this. And he said, that's great. Actually, we want you on it. and they made the point they didn't want any current election administrators. So they reached out to me, they also reached out to the former executive elections director in Texas and an outgoing local election administrator. But it was a great experience. But yeah, that's the backstory. I reached out to Ben, but he was going to reach out to me. And that really got me re-engaged in the elections world. You know, I had taken a little bit of time off, having left office, gone up to Harvard to run the Institute. And I haven't really looked back. I've been involved in elections at a really high level for the last 10 years.
Sometimes
I owe all that to President Obama, Bob, and Ben.
Yeah, sometimes it's, you know, interesting what happens when you pick up the phone and yeah, maybe be careful what you wish for, but obviously been able to do a lot of good work on this. Now, the commission was really focused on kind of the nitty-gritty of, you know, the actual administration of the election. How do we process voters? And I know that you all went all around the country and had listening sessions. And one of my favorite stories you tell is about how the commission went to Disney World and learned from Disney. So what does Mickey Mouse have to do with elections?
Yeah, we were definitely focused on the nitty gritty. That was part of the executive order that the president put together. We were going to avoid the controversial stuff and just focus on making elections work better. One of our commissioners was the head of parks operations for Disney. And part of why he was added, and then this is, explains why we went to go to Disney, was to learn how Disney and the private sector managed lines. You know, those who are listening, and I'm sure you've been to Disney and Kings Island, where I'm from, up in, you know, Northern Kentucky, Greater Cincinnati, all these big entities, big businesses have to manage lines. And so we went to Disney and learned how they focus on improving lines, the line experience. So sometimes you're just stuck with a line. So how do you make it work better? And if you think about Disney, they do a really good job. I think the classic is like Space Mountain, where the ride starts while you're in line, where you go through the moving stairwell, the, you know, escalator, and you see all the space stuff. And Disney does a great job of that. So in elections, the argument was, well, make sure people have sample ballots and other things they could do while they're in line. We have kids voting, for example. But Disney used data. Now everybody uses data, but it was really striking to go to underground into Disney. We went in the tunnels underneath and saw how they monitored how many people had ridden a ride, how many people should have ridden that ride based upon the day of the week and the weather. They learned about how they staff and meet peak demands. And so the lesson there was, hey, in elections, we don't use data very well. You know, a great example is in Kentucky a couple of years ago, we had a really long ballot in 2022 because of the presidential, or because of the two constitutional amendments, plus all the local elected offices. And if the ballot is like, if it takes like three times longer to vote, and it doesn't, you know, your turnout can be lighter, but it could just take, you could have a lot longer lines because the transaction time is an important component in calculating resources. And that was something that most election administrators didn't do a very good job with. So going to Disney was really eye-opening in that regard. And then the last one was Disney was constantly trying to improve and shorten lines. Because if you have a shorter line, more people want to, you know, pay to go to Disney, they can get people through the rides quicker. And so we saw some of the improvements. For example, the best one I remember was Space Mountain. Those who've ridden it, it's a single file roller coaster. Most roller coasters are 2 and 3 wide. And they noticed that people were hesitating when they got on the ride for the first time because they were expecting they'd be paired into twos. But instead of going side by side, you went behind one, and you know, one behind one another. And so they put a video up, no words, just a video loop of people getting on and people getting off. When they put that video up, they improved ride efficiency. People got on quicker, they got off quicker, and more people were able to ride the ride in a given day. It was a very small improvement. And so again, the lesson for elections was, how do you set up the room? How do you divide, you know, electronic poll books was a great example of an innovation that has sped up the line because now we've reduced the amount of time it takes to check in, having more tabletops so more people can vote at once they've checked in. There's a whole lot of these kind of engineering things that Disney does, and they were definitely applicable to elections.
That's fascinating. And you also learned a little bit about security, right? About sort of watching the process as people are moving through the lines. Tell us a little bit about that.
Watching from the camera, the security of how they use they use our personal data, actually, you know, to navigate that. They also would, you know, have the staff right there. And if there was an issue, they could be, you know, there was just so many lessons. It was really striking. I think that was, again, one of the brilliance of the panel or the commission was bringing that private sector expertise. We also had the CEO of Deloitte Consulting, who really ripped into a local election administrator in Florida, one of the counties with really long lines. She said, you know, we planned really well. We knew how many people were going to vote early. On election, how many people are going to vote on election day, and how many people are going to vote by mail? And I remember my colleague said, So if you knew all of that and you still had lines, that was a bad plan. She's like, no, we had a good plan. We planned, we had the right numbers. She's like, no, your plan failed. You had long lines. And it was because they weren't using that data correctly. And so, you know, and thing with Disney, with the security breaches, concerns that businesses have, it was, you know, very early on. And I think in the elections world, we started realizing, hey, we got to pay closer attention to this. So it was just there was a lot of little things that came out of that effort. You know, one of the best parts about that report was it didn't sit around and gather dust. Bob and Ben and I went around the country, especially Ben and I, we went to Republican states and gave pitches. Like, here's what we did. The Republican National Lawyers Association actually endorsed almost everything in the report. We worked with Republican secretaries of state and Republican legislators to implement things like online voting, like using the data. It really did. It wasn't sexy. You know, it wasn't some of the big stuff. A lot of the stuff that you write about, I think, you know, which are maybe the things that cause a lot of debate. Ours was just the nuts and bolts of making elections work better.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the report. It came out in January 2014. It was unanimous, and it had a lot of recommendations for really local election administration. So I guess I had two questions about that. One is, how did you achieve such consensus on issues? Because even if they're, as you said, not sexy, I mean, people care a lot about how a democracy works, how elections run. So how did you get bipartisan consensus? And then tell us a little bit about some of the proposals and where we've seen some successes from them.
Sure. I think, again, I go back to this executive order where we were asked to look at how do you run elections in when there's severe weather? How do you manage the line experience? Or how do you reduce lines? How do you use the mechanics? And a lot of this stuff, honestly, is just not that controversial. And even some of the things that even to this day have some level of controversy, such as vote by mail without an excuse or in-person voting without an excuse, what's often called early voting. You know, in advance of election day, Kentucky, we now have 3 days of early voting where you can just come in on the, you know, a couple of days before and just vote if you feel like it. Other states do it for a couple of weeks or more. When we approach that from how do we make the line, the election day experience better, the lines experience better, all of a sudden you're thinking, wait a minute, having more people vote by mail or having more people vote in advance of election day, that actually reduces the lines on election day because you have fewer people voting. Or at least, and because you have fewer people voting, you can allocate resources differently. And so even those things that were a little bit more controversial, but the other thing we did was we worked with a lot of experts in election administration. You know, I don't know that you were necessarily involved, but a lot of your colleagues around the country on the law professor side, as well as some of the academics, the political scientists and other public administrators who study these things. And so we were very much grounded in the data and the research. And honestly, it wasn't really that hard to come to consensus because we were focused on the data and focusing on improving that line experience. And that North Star of how do we make it better for the voters, you know, really removed the controversy. When I mentioned the Republican National Lawyers, the only thing that they didn't support was the early voting recommendation. And even that, it wasn't that of a vehement opposition, but every other endorsement, every other proposal they endorsed.
So where are the success stories? Where have places, you know, implemented some of the recommendations and we've seen improvements in the voter experience because of it?
So one thing that I think we pushed a lot of was this had started, but we put a lot of gas on the fire for expanding online voter registration. And it's not even so much letting people register to vote the first time online, although that certainly happens, but it's the updates. You move around, you go, maybe you get your driver's license updated, and sometimes that transaction works. That's another recommendation we had. But being able to, by putting that imprimatur in a bipartisan way, saying, hey, we need to be able to update or register online, and the technology and the security is there for it, that was a big improvement. We also, the concept of AVR or automated or automatic, whatever you want to call it, voter registration, where you have a government transaction, usually with the DMV, this is the motor voter transaction. And instead of like saying, hey, do you want to register to vote, which often isn't the right question ought to be, do you want to update your address? It automates that process, electronically transferring that data. You know, so many states prior to 2013, I'd say only a handful were electronically connected to the DMV and the voter registration list. And we highlighted Delaware, which was one of the first states to do this. And they had a very that their program had a hard stop. So you had to ask the question, you had to ask it in the right way. And so that you started seeing, I think, more accelerated voter registration improvements. And then the last thing I would highlight was data. And I mentioned I referenced Disney keeping track of all that. Giving election administrators the tools to calculate how long does it take to vote? That's the transaction time. How many people do you expect to vote? When do they vote? And where are they going to vote? And we created spreadsheets and formulas that people could use to try to allocate or develop resources. We know that elections are underfunded, and we know that a lot of times, the local governments are just saying, no, we don't have, it's not a priority, or we don't have any money. Sorry, we'd love to, we just don't. But that allowed at least the election administrator to try to estimate, this is what I really need, as opposed to being vague and saying, we've grown, or this is a long ballot, or there's going to be high turnout. These tools gave them the precision to plan, but it also gave them the precision to ask for a budget. And then it also was a little bit of a CYA, because then if it was a bad experience, they could say, hey, I raised this flag. This is what I asked for. They didn't give it to me. And so sometimes when you're a government official, the CYA can be helpful because it gets you your resources, the next time. I think that the data and using technology to improve or reduce lines a lot of that just kind of fell into that bucket.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of your current roles is to represent the Kentucky County Clerks Association, which is an organization that represents all 120 county clerks in Kentucky. Of course, these are the individuals who are in charge of running elections at the local level here in Kentucky. One of the things that I've learned from you, and we've worked together, is the importance of having county clerks in the so-called room where it happens in coming up with election policy, because they're the ones on the ground actually implementing this. Tell us a little mm-hmm. bit more about that. How important is it, and how do we convince legislators who, they think they're the experts in election law because they won an election for their seat? How do we convince them to make sure that we're bringing in the local election officials who actually implement these rules?
Well, I'll start just in most states, Louisiana might be the only meaningful exception. Elections are, in fact, run at the local level. Every state has a chief elections officer that's designated under federal law. And in most cases, like in Kentucky, that's the Secretary of State. State keeps track of voter registration lists. They promulgate regulations, are a very important public face when it comes to elections. But ultimately, the running of the elections is at the local level. And in Kentucky, that's the county clerk, which for those listeners who are not from Kentucky, our county clerks are elected every 4 years at the county level. There's no term limits, but they have a number of other duties. They are kind of like the Secretary of State of the county. They do notaries and deeds and other recorded instruments. They also, that's where you go to get your license plates and renew those license plates. And so elections are a part of that job. They're actually a small part if you measure it by these number of employees, and the county governments have to pay the expenses for elections. And so one of the things that I really focused on as working with the clerks in Kentucky was making sure that they're in the room, because they know the specifics about how these things really work. And I've learned a ton. I thought I knew a lot about elections from my time as Secretary of State, from my work in the commission and other things I've done over the years. My knowledge of how elections are actually run has increased dramatically over the past couple of years. So my goal is to get those clerks in front of legislators, engage with legislators, and be proactive, not just reactive. Because as you mentioned, legislators have a lot of ideas on how elections work. Usually they think they work pretty well because the right people got elected. That's why they're in Frankfurt or in Washington or wherever they may happen to be. But one of the things that our clerks have in Kentucky is they're usually very well liked by their locals. It's a visible position. It's a people who hold those in almost every county are hardworking and well liked. And in some respects, most respects, they're either the most popular or one of the most popular elected officials in the county. So leveraging their popularity and leveraging their knowledge and just to kind of work with legislators. So over the last couple of years, a focus after we, 2021, I guess, we worked to implement some of the things that were done temporarily in 2020 during the pandemic. In the last couple of years, it's been cleanup. And I said to the clerks, tell me something that's been annoying that a law can fix, and let's go fix it. So here, I'll give you a perfect example. This is not a big deal, but it's annoying when you're a clerk and you have to explain the situation. So in a school board race, nobody runs. and this happens sometimes, people withdraw from the race or nobody files. There are two laws that give two different answers on how to handle that situation. In most cases, when there's no candidates, a write-in is accepted, and whoever gets the most votes of those who apply to be a write-in candidate wins that election, no matter what level of government that is in Kentucky. So that's our generic rule. There was another law, though, that was passed that said if there's nobody running, that you can't have a write-in and that it's appointed. But that statute didn't notwithstand, to use one of the legal words that are in statutes, say, notwithstanding KRS, whatever, this is how you govern the situation. It didn't say that. So you had conflicting statutes. The attorney general issued an opinion saying, we think it's one way, but it's not clear. And so whenever it happened, a clerk would have to explain, this is how we're going to do it. And then somebody would say, oh, that's not how I want it, you know. And so we fixed it. So there's all kinds of things like that that are in the code. And in this past year, we were able to get a unanimous bill, House Bill 580, which was full of little tweaks like that. Mm-hmm. As I said to the legislature, this is not a bill. This is not an emergency bill that has to pass or elections are going to be terrible this year and in the future. But it's a bill that will make elections work much, much better. Because it had about 30 sections full of these little changes.
And making elections better, you know, is a bipartisan, you know, thing. It's why you get bipartisan support. We're just about out of time, but let me ask you my one final question very quickly, which is, why should people vote?
Well, I think it's important to have a say in our decision makers and at whatever level of government. And our local decision makers are elected by a lot smaller margins. So I've always... Yeah, I've been a voter. My parents ingrained this upon me. I thought that it was a really important process. In fact, one of the things I just started doing is I'm an early voter poll worker. I work on the Saturday of early voting. I believe in this so much. And, you know, I always want to see my friends come vote on that Saturday. But it's our way to have a little say. And, you know, every once in a while an election does come to a handful of votes. So an economist might say you're wasting your time. But I'd say you're not wasting your time. You're fulfilling one of your most important duties as a citizen.
Trey Grayson is the former Kentucky Secretary of State and still works on bipartisan solutions to election reform to this day. Trey, thanks so much for joining Democracy Optimist.
Thanks, Josh.
Josh, Trey Grayson talked about President Obama's Presidential Commission on Election Administration. How did this differ from President Trump's Presidential Commission on Election Integrity? He set that up in 2017.
Yeah, I want to focus on how Trey discussed the bipartisan nature of that commission that he served on compared to what President Trump did with his Presidential Commission on Election Integrity. The goal, according to Trump and his administration, was to review issues of voter fraud and election integrity. He chose Vice President Mike Pence to chair the commission, and Republican Chris Kobach of Kansas was its vice chair and day-to-day administrator. Kobach, for his part, was known for peddling lies about election fraud and was admonished by a federal judge for doing so. Trump did name two Democratic secretaries of state to the commission to give it a bipartisan veneer. That said, one of those members, Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlop, said that although the commission was purported to investigate Trump's claim of voter fraud and make suggestions on ways to improve the integrity of elections, the Democratic members were actually walled off, and the commission became more and more mysterious in how it was moving. In another controversial action, Chris Kobach, along with the Department of Justice, asked every state for personal voter information. 44 states and D.C. refused to comply, citing voter privacy. There were also 8 lawsuits against the commission, including from some of its members, about the commission's operation. Ultimately, President Trump disbanded the commission in January 2018 without it ever issuing a report. Now, I want to make clear that I'm not making a partisan point here, but if you compare the Obama Commission and the Trump Commission, you see a stark contrast. The Obama Commission had bipartisan leaders as chairs, and the makeup of the commission was split evenly between Republicans and Democrats. The Obama commission's work was transparent, and the recommendations it issued were unanimous, very different from how the Trump commission operated. It just goes to show that there's a good way and a not so good way at achieving bipartisan consensus on issues of voting rights and election law.
I think when we think of elections and the mechanics of them, we think of county clerks, we think of secretaries of state, maybe members of the Board of Elections. But how do these people learn best practices for the work?
They actually go to school. The University of Minnesota's Hubert Humphrey School of Public Affairs offers an online certificate in election administration. The effort stems from the 2014 Presidential Commission on Election Administration, the one that Trey Grayson served on. According to the program's website, the program is presented in an accessible and stimulating online format that allows students to continue with their current employment while working toward a university certificate. The curriculum includes three required courses: a survey in election administration, a course on elections and the law, and a class called Strategic Management of Election Administration. Students must also choose among various electives, which include courses on voter outreach and participation, data analysis, and election security. There's also an annual conference where students can explore these issues, and there are a variety of webinars online from election experts who discuss these issues. This isn't the only effort at professionalizing the work of election administrators. Our conversation with Jennifer Morrell of the Elections Group will also explore the education that these individuals can receive. It goes to show that serving as an election official is a professional undertaking with year-round responsibilities and opportunities for further education. What?
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants, Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer, Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU.